I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about what it takes to build the thriving communities that make for a thriving state. We're going to talk about the challenges and opportunities confronting cities, towns, and rural communities, and the way those challenges and opportunities are similar and the ways they are different. My guests are three senior policy analysts from the Indiana University Public Policy Institute, Drew Classic, John Marin, and Jamie Palmer. Please join the conversation. Please call us at 866-476-3881. Email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is nolimitswfyi. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today on No Limits about thriving communities, thriving state. It's a two-year project that studies what makes Hoosiers thrive in urban, mid-sized, and rural small-town communities, with each community type having its own commission. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. Well, my guests are all IU Public Policy Institute senior analysts. They are Drew Classic, John Marin, and Jamie Palmer. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, tell me a little bit about how this project got started, what the genesis is, and where you are right now. Drew, everyone's pointing to you, so I think that means you.
Well, that's because they don't want to talk first. generally, we did Policy Choices 1 a few years ago, which ended in a debate amongst the three gubernatorial candidates, and the idea was, how do we next contribute to helping Indiana move forward? When you look at data, you see that urban, rural, and suburban Indiana tend to be moving in different directions, but we realize that if all parts of Indiana are thriving, then no part of Indiana is actually thriving, because we have an interrelated future. And so the notion of thriving community, thriving state is, how do we assure that all parts of Indiana are going forward to find as bright a future as possible?
And so where are we in terms of the rollout of this project right now? Jamie, John, either one of you?
Well, we're just in the very early phases of the project. We started with a kickoff event in January at the Lumina Foundation downtown, where we brought together the various commissions as well as other folks that were interested in this topic. And then we're going to have a series of 8 meetings over the next year where the commissions will be coming together, considering various topics that are of interest to the various commissions, and then crafting recommendations within those areas. So we're at the very early phases right now of that work, and probably still a little bit general, a little bit abstract, and we'll get more concrete and more specific as we go through the process.
Perhaps a silly question, but I think it's an important one. Jamie, I'm going to toss, how are we defining thriving here? What are the standards here for determining either whether a community is thriving or the state is?
Well, we're obviously bringing data to it, but we're allowing the commission members in each of the commissions to define what that means exactly, and then decide what topics it is they want to tackle to try to accomplish whatever thriving is for each of the three types of communities.
So it could conceivably arrive with three different definitions of thriving?
A little bit, and we do have a plan sort of after they've all sort of done their individual work to get them back together, think about what they've said, and see how either it conflicts or it's similar, and try to work out anything that, you know, is conflicting so that it will be holistic in the end.
What we hope to find is that there are common elements across urban, mid-size, and rural Indiana that all places need to see action towards to thrive, in which case it doesn't matter who you are, public, private, or not-for-profit, we should get after those thriving notions right away. We also suspect that at times there's going to be things that are good for urban Indiana that aren't as good for midsize or rural, and we're going to have to figure out how to enable each part of Indiana to have thriving strategies in spite of the fact that at times what's good for one place may not be as good for another.
Drew, you mentioned that there are certain elements that that you're going to be looking at that perhaps link the urban, the mid-sized, and the small town or rural communities. What are those elements?
Again, we're asking our commission to help us understand that. So far, what we've heard, at least from the Urban Commission, which is the one I chair, and Jamie and I and John have talked across on this, is that quality of life, education, and ability to attract a talented workforce seem to be common themes.
Okay. And are each of you chairing then one of the commissions?
We are. So Jamie is in charge of the mid-sized communities, and then I've got the rural commission.
You get the John Mellencamp commission.
You've got it.
All right, the small town. Okay. So, and have each of the commissions begun their work? I mean, are you beginning to see some things emerging from this? I'll tell you what, we'll work down, since we've heard from Drew on the urban. Jamie, I'll go to you on midsize.
So the midsize commission has chosen the issues that they're going to focus on. On the education workforce side, they really, valuing education seemed to be the thing that they thought was missing and that needed work. They were interested in local government reform, civic leadership and philanthropy, and then quality of life, quality of place. So we'll plan to spend the next year basically coming up with recommendations and best practices on those topics.
And before I move on to, again, the John Mellencamp Commission, Drew, how many of those were popping up in your preliminary work with the Urban Commission?
In various ways, all those popped up. I should add that within our commission, two other issues that really emerged were diversity, not just of population, but also of choice of restaurants, employment opportunities, et cetera. So somehow diversity beyond just demographics is going to become a big theme, I believe, is likely to become a big theme within our group.
Okay. And small town rural communities.
For the Rural Commission, we may be adopting a new theme song, I think. So we've also kind of articulated kind of a four core areas that we're looking at. And one is leadership development. And specifically, as it relates to rural areas, there's a concern that some of the best and the brightest often move away to places where there's economic opportunity. So how do you develop the leadership in the communities that you have and then retain those folks that are naturally likely to become leaders and keep them in your community. So leadership is going to be a big issue. Looking at workforce development, workforce supply issues. How do you create a culture of entrepreneurship as an economic development driver for rural areas? And then looking at infrastructure, and specifically within infrastructure, looking specifically at broadband connectivity, what we find as you get out into rural Indiana, the connectivity that we all take for granted. We work on a college campus and we have very high connectivity speeds. That doesn't exist in a lot of other places, and that can be a significant headwind to an enterprise trying to compete in the global marketplace.
John, it sounds like, I mean, for years we have talked about brain drain here in Indiana as a statewide problem. You're saying to some degree it also can be an internal problem, that it hurts these small town rural communities to lose, you know, their talent, their leadership class, as it might be, to Indianapolis or to Fort Wayne or Evansville or some other.
Yeah, and I think when you break the numbers down, I think that's what you really see. I think you see a lot of folks that come through, the students that do well in high school, go to college and come back, and then they look at their economic prospects, even wanting to stay relatively close to home, and considering some of our major metropolitan areas are close to home. And you'll see folks from Paoli or from Covington or from other places move to Indianapolis, maybe not necessarily losing them to Chicago or Houston, but losing them to Indianapolis in terms of the economic impact that has on those communities and the opportunities that remain in those communities.
Well, and obviously Indianapolis and the urban communities, I'm sorry, I may be anticipating where things are going here. Drew has an interest and in most cases have strategies to try to attract those kind of people.
And in fact, that's where the interrelatedness really becomes important, because if you look at demographic change and population growth, our metropolitan areas are growing and our rural areas are remaining relatively stagnant. But if you look deeper into the numbers, in 2010, central Indiana, Marion County and the counties surrounding it, were a net importer of 20,000 households from the rest of Indiana, but a net exporter of 2,000 households to the rest of the United States. So our growth, our brain growth, comes from those hardworking folks in places like Monticello and Paoli sending their kids off to IU-Purdue or even IUPUI and getting their degrees. And when they get their degrees, they tend to stay in central Indiana. So by 2040, if we can't figure out how to make sure that rural Indiana is thriving, the ability of urban Indiana to thrive starts to diminish.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about Thriving Communities, Thriving State. It's a two-year project to study the ways that we can build thriving communities, make them work together to enhance the quality of life in Indiana. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. So it sounds like some of what you have to do is sort of, I'm trying to think of the proper verb here, channel the sort of natural competitive instincts between your various constituencies. I'm using the term constituency because I can't think of another one right now, and get them so that they're thinking a little more holistically about how the state moves forward. Is that a fair assessment, Jamie?
I think it is. Not only do they need to think about how to make their own community successful when they aren't necessarily now, but then how collectively we make everyone more successful.
How much of this, how much awareness do you have to create of the necessity? You know, admittedly, I've been covering the legislature for a lot of years, and that may not be the path to enlightenment. But, you know, often those concepts and the idea of if you're talking about the relationships between mid-sized communities and rural communities or urban areas, the discussion is almost an adversarial one. They see their interest almost as pitted against each other in the political process. John, you're nodding your head.
Well, and I think it's an excellent point, and in some way, shape, or form, that was a little bit of the genesis behind the project as we outlined it. You know, Drew mentioned the interdependency and the future of urban Indiana and mid-sized Indiana relying in part on rural areas continuing to thrive. And so recognizing that we do have that interdependent future, but yet we are pitted against one another often in an initial sense, I think being able to articulate that message about the interdependent future and talk about why it's interdependent, and then approaching it from maybe an asset-based perspective, how do we help communities of all stripes build upon the assets that each one has to mitigate the challenges that they face is the approach that you take. I think most communities recognize that there are good things about their communities and there are negative things about their communities, and we talk about how do you position your assets to set the foundation that you can mitigate your challenges. And we also talk about the linkages between our geographies. So we did a quick analysis that said if you look at it from the census definitions, or not the census definition, but if you look at census geographies, 48% of the population still lives in rural areas, so small towns, farms, not from a county perspective, but when you get down to the actual street level. And so when you recognize that nearly half the population still lives in rural areas, but a lot of them work in urban and mid-sized areas, you again get that sense of interdependency. And how do we craft that notion along with recognizing that we have a shared future that we have to work together toward?
That actually is an aspect I hadn't even thought about in this conversation. I mean, you know, which commission do those, I mean, in that situation, just in that example that you laid out, someone who lives in a rural area but works in an urban one, you know, which commission do they fall under?
well, we're the individual person, didn't matter to us as much as the commissioners. But in the end, the real point of that is that mm-hmm. their futures are interrelated. You can live in urban, drive through, or live in rural, drive through suburban, and end up working in urban. If all three places aren't doing well, your journey to work and your day at home and your day at work isn't going well.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about thriving communities, thriving states. This is a two-year project that is studying what makes Hoosiers thrive in urban, mid-sized, and rural or small-town communities. And each community type has its own commission. We're, in fact, talking with the commissioners here on the program. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Drew Classic, John Marin, and Jamie Palmer. They're all senior policy analysts with the IU Public Policy Institute. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking about thriving communities, thriving states, thriving state. I keep wanting to make that plural. It's a two-year project that studies what makes Hoosiers thrive in urban, mid-sized, and rural small-town communities, with each community type having its own commission. We're talking with commissioners who also are senior policy analysts with the Indiana University Public Policy Institute. They are Drew Classic, John Marin, and Jamie Palmer. Well, I want to follow what we were talking about before the break, but I realized in doing that, we should have defined really how what you're considering urban, what you're considering mid-sized, and what you are considering rural or small town. And now this time, Drew is giving it back to you and pointing at you, John, so it's yours.
Well, so if you ever want to have an arcane argument, you can lock a bunch of policy analysts in the room and have a conversation about this. What we were trying to get at with our definitions were some notion of legacy cities that had kind of old urban problems or old urban issues, those places that are kind of relative to then those places that are kind of mid-sized and or kind of newer economy versus those that were rural. So with the urban communities, we took any community that had been among the 10 largest communities in the state of Indiana anytime since 1900, that was a first or second class city. So you're looking at Indianapolis, obviously, but then your Fort Wayne's, your Gary's, your Hammond's, your Evansville's, Elkhart, East Chicago, and South Bend, and I'm probably missing a few. Then conversely, the rural was essentially, let's try to establish a population threshold below which we're going to consider you rural. And the number that we came to was 15,000. And then mid-size are kind of those that are in between.
Everything that's left over, right? Jamie's nodding her head. Okay. So in terms of, you know, what we were talking about before we went to the break was really sort of these internal tensions that have been within the state, particularly in the political process. And you said that was sort of the genesis of this project, to see if you could break some of that down and get folks working a little, or at least thinking a little more collaboratively. How do you get past what is, again, I've covered politics in this state for a long time, and both the urban areas and the rural areas. We're going to leave you out of this mix for a second, Jamie, but you'll come in a moment, are convinced they're getting the short end of the stick. You know, it is their real firm belief system that when it comes to allocating state resources, all of that sort of stuff, if you're a rural legislator and you're representing those areas, you're convinced it's all going to the cities. And you talk to any urban legislator, and they'll cite the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute study from a couple of years ago and say the opposite is true. How do you get past that conviction, whether it's right or wrong? Drew, I'll start with you.
Well, my quick answer would be, I wish we knew. Beyond that, I think one notion is time frame. And so we tend to play a zero-sum game about tomorrow mm-hmm. and want to win then rather than say, what do we each have to do to be better in 10 years? So to help people come to understand that 10 years from now, if urban, rural, and midsize aren't all thriving, then because of the interrelationships between them, all will be at risk. The analogy I'd make, which is kind of strange, is we go on family vacations every year. And when I don't know about you, but when I get on a vacation, the very first day I want to play golf. Somebody wants to go for a bike ride. Somebody wants to run. Somebody wants to go swimming. It means three of the four of us are going to be unhappy that day. What I try to remind myself is the goal is at Christmas time to say, wasn't that a great vacation? And to make a great vacation, everybody has to occasionally give up doing what they want to do so somebody else has fun. We somehow have to convert that family vacation notion into this process so that no matter who you are, urban, midsize, or rural, you get this notion that to be great 10 years from now, all of us are going to have to make compromises today.
How easy a sell is that, John?
Well, and I think that Drew's right. You're right. That can be a difficult sell. I think one of the benefits of this process is twofold. Since we've gotten folks, not only state legislators, each commission has a state legislator on it, but we also have folks that are working on the ground, mayors, local elected officials, local private folks, that are a little bit closer to some of those issues. And I think they recognize that that zero-sum game that often mm-hmm. happens at the legislature, that conversation, doesn't do anything to move the ball forward. And so I think we are blessed with good commissioners that see that we've got to have a future that we're working toward and that we're going to work together. And then the second point that I would make, we're also very lucky to the chairs of this effort are former Chief Justice Randy Shepherd and former Lieutenant Governor Kathy Davis, who are ably working across the commissions to help bridge some of those conversations. So whereas the three of us may not have the chops to be able to have those conversations sometimes, or at least have people pay attention to me anyway,
They can force the conversation. And Jamie, until relatively recently, the areas you're talking about often weren't included in the conversation at all. I mean, or if they were, it could be in somewhat disparaging terms. You know, suburbia is generally the connotation there is not always a positive one. And, they'll talk about soccer moms or some other slightly derogatory term that seems to diminish. How do you force consideration of what are issues for mid-sized communities?
Well, I think what the guys have said, we do all of those things for sure. One thing I did want to mention is part of our project is to think about how communities can help themselves. So giving them best practices for how to accomplish some improvements on whatever topics the three commissions choose so that we're never going to have enough money. That's, and the argument is usually about how many resources everyone's going to get. And often they get more than they seem to think. But we always are going to need to figure out how we make more of the resources that we have. And my commission's a bit of a challenge because I actually have some of the sort of small, older industrial cities because I'm mostly mm-hmm. 15,000 to 50. Mm-hmm. Then I have the suburbans, and then I also have sort of independent cities that aren't, they aren't either one of those. And so we'll be definitely wrestling with how we come up with solutions for that broad set of communities.
I think it's also important to acknowledge that urban, midsize, and rural are always going to compete, and the competition is not necessarily bad. It's the various places forcing themselves to be as good as they possibly can. The challenge is to figure out when we're better benefited by cooperating, and that typically is when we're competing against a Louisville, a Cincinnati, or an Austin, Texas, as opposed to over the pie that is Indiana.
We are talking about thriving communities, thriving state, really studying what makes cities, mid-sized urban areas, and rural small-town communities thrive so that the entire state does. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email No Limits at WFYI.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Sharon, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me on. My question relates to the urban commissioner. And it's a two-part question. I'll ask them both, and then I can list the answer off the air. Mm-hmm. So the first part of the question is, are our urban areas predominantly hubs of African-American residents? I mean, is that where most of our African-American citizens live? And the second part of that question is, if that is the case, what are some of the community assets that have been found to be associated with success or the thriving of various aspects of that of those communities?
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Sharon.
Drew. All right, you're welcome.
Traditionally, African Americans have lived in large numbers in urban areas, but I should note that all of Indiana is becoming increasingly more diverse. I hope that answers part one. On part two, the question, which is really important and really good, is how do we build more bridges to opportunity for all people in Indiana, and particularly in your case, in urban Indiana? My commission so far has particularly focused on the notion of education and what we might call bridge employment opportunities. My grandparents moved here from Europe. They couldn't speak English. They had no education. But in those days, you could work in manufacturing, and in one generation, we were fortunate enough to go from immigrants to middle class. And I think we've got to figure out how to rebuild that bridge through both education and employment opportunities.
We've also gotten a Facebook question from a listener named George. And if you'd like to reach out to us by Facebook, you can do so at No Limits WFYI. George asks, what role does the lack of mass transit play in limiting the achievement of rural, suburban, and urban communities? I'll throw that one to Jamie first.
Well, I think, you know, being able to get around affects everything people do. So while you might expect that it would be a bigger problem sort of maybe for urban and potentially for rural, I mean, it obviously affects individuals in middle-sized communities. And in some of the communities that my commission's serving, they're probably pretty well served that they've had transit for a long time, but there'll be others where there's absolutely nothing. So it's a challenge to come up with solutions when there's lots mm-hmm. of different situations that there are out in the state.
Yeah, John.
And then I think I would note that the mass transit question exists on a couple different levels. One, if you are a young professional or professional really of any age that has the opportunity to locate in any sort of places, a lot of the research points to millennials especially, but all sorts of urban dwellers not wanting to participate in the car culture. And so not having that opportunity in Indiana hamstrings its competitiveness relative to other metropolitan regions in other parts of the state. And then the other thing I would add on mass transit is in our circles, a lot of times we like to talk about it as an economic competitiveness tool. Well, one of the other things that we know, just looking at demographics, is that the population as a whole is aging. The state's population by 2040, the 65 and older population is going to increase by about 67%. It's going to more than double in rural areas relative to what it was in 2010. And so at some point, and this happens at different points in different people's lives, if the automobile is the only mode of transportation by which you can get around, at the point at which you should take someone's keys away, then really means that you take away their opportunity to participate in their community. So having some sort of transit option available in all communities that are context sensitive to that community become important not only for economic competitiveness and attraction, but also for promoting livability among folks that live there who may not participate in the car culture.
Yeah, Drew, let me refine the question, but I'll give you a crack at it, too. You know, the perception, at least in this part of the state, we're broadcasting from Indianapolis right now, is that it's sort of a central Indiana issue because it's been a priority for a lot of major players in this community. But when we were up doing a show just a few months ago with our friends at Lakeshore Public Radio, Northwest Indiana, they made it clear, no, it's a priority for us up there too. And they link it not only to, you know, the kind of quality of life issues, but also productivity and being able to attract talented workforce and all of that. Does it hurt that that is perceived to be almost exclusively, I mean, to say urban, but really a central Indiana issue when it sounds like, at least from those folks up there, it's not true?
Well, if it was perceived to be only a central Indiana issue, then that would be a problem. But we did we've driven around the state to five different places to hear what citizens think a thriving Indiana should look like.
And we should note that you had to drive.
Thank you. Yes.
okay.
You should. okay. Let's see. Evansville, Northwest Indiana, Fort Wayne, Columbus, and I'm pretty sure I'm missing one.
Indianapolis.
Indianapolis. Yeah. And virtually everywhere we went.
We walked to that one.
Thank you. Yes, exactly. I bicycled. Everywhere that we went, we heard some notion of mass transit, and they made all the points that both Jamie and John made, and then they made one additional point, which is it is an economic opportunity asset, too, in the sense that there are people who are not living close enough to their job without reliable transportation. And so mass transit isn't just a millennial attraction economic development tool. It's a tool that helps people be better connected to employment opportunity.
How much also, you know, when you talk about breaking down the zero-sum dynamic here and getting past that, probably the most recent manifestation of that kind of thinking was the tussle we had over education funding in the legislative session that just wrapped up, the perception being that, you know, that funds were shifted away from, you know, the folks in Drew's commission and moved more to the ones in Jamie's, from urban to suburban schools. You know, how do you deal with that and get into that mindset? Because we still do, to some degree, think of education as a local problem, even though it is well more than half of the state's budget. Jamie, I'll start with you.
Well, there also is the dynamic that some of it went from traditional schools to less traditional schools, so the charters, and so it's really very complicated.
Oh, I can bring peace to the Middle East, or I can understand Indiana's education policy, but I can't do both.
it's a real challenge because education is so critical to the definition of community. That's why they go often if they have children. That's certainly why they go live where they live. And while the pie might have gotten bigger, it didn't get big enough so that we could leave the urban schools whole. And so it's a real challenge. And as the guys have talked about for transportation, it's another sort of attraction and, sort of economic issue because, you know, we need our children to be learning what they need to learn to then be productive citizens. And people are going to come places where they think their children can get good education.
And how much I noticed, you know, when we kicked off this hour, in all three segments, education was a priority. And all of that. Is it the same priority in all three places? Where does it rank? I'll start with Drew first in terms of the sets of things that they're concerned about it with each commission.
That's actually going to be the topic of our next commission meeting. But education was probably the first notion that was brought up in our preliminary discussion about what a thriving Indiana would look like. And the general idea, which is kind of interesting, is that everybody deserves equal opportunity when it comes to education. But we have to be aware that that doesn't mean that everybody needs the same option. And so the idea of equal opportunity with a menu of choices was what seems to be emerging from my commission.
Jamie, how about yours?
Well, I think the focus is a lot on how education interacts with workforce opportunities. And so I think it's pretty, you know, that's pretty universal. Our folks were trying to think about why we can't get that done. And when I think about how they talked about it, the answer is good enough is not good enough. And so we need to figure out how we get multiple generations to value education so that, you know, basically can get parents to encourage their children to choose careers and do the education appropriate to get there.
John, we'll catch you on the other side. If you are just joining us, we are talking about Thriving Communities, Thriving State, a study about what will make Indiana work through all of its communities. My guests are Drew Classic, John Marin, and Jamie Palmer. They're all senior policy analysts with the Indiana University Public Policy Institute. I am John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking today about Thriving Communities, Thriving State. It's a two-year project that studies what makes Hoosiers thrive in urban, mid-sized, and rural small-town communities, with each community type having its own commission. My guests are the senior policy analysts who are also the commissioners for those three commissions. They are Drew Classic, John Marin, and Jamie Palmer. They're all with the Indiana University Public Policy Institute. Before we went to the break, we were talking about where education ranks in the list of priorities for each of these commissions. Pretty high, we heard from Drew and Jamie, in slightly different ways, though, and for slightly different reasons. And now we're going to the what I call the John Mellencamp Commission here.
Well, for the rural areas, well, we didn't articulate it as an area that we were going to focus on specifically. What we recognized is that education really cuts across every topic that we want to talk about. So as it relates to developing leadership, you know, the education system has a role to play in that, certainly preparing students to work in the workforce or to become tomorrow's entrepreneurs, tomorrow's creators is important. And then looking at broadband connectivity and how that enables learning or sometimes hinders it if you don't have access to ready access to the internet as well. And so recognizing that education is just a critical component across those four areas, as well as any number of other areas that we may not get around to talking about on our commission. It's really the foundation. And to Drew's point, it's the great equalizer. And so going back to your original question, the school funding formula kind of defines what equality of opportunity is going to mean.
Is there a way to get past, I mean, I'm trying to think of a more graceful image than this. To get past, though, that whole idea of you know, those resources, and we've all talked about the allocation of resources in all of these areas as something other than, you know, ravenous dogs going after the last piece of meat, as it were. Is there a way to break that down, Jamie?
I'm not sure, really. Legislators have a really tough job when they're trying to sort of cut up the pie, especially given how limiting we create we limit how big the pie is. I would say, though, again, that one of the premises of this project is no matter how many resources we have, we want to use them as well as we can. And so one of the things we're planning to do is to try to help communities think about how they can get as much as they can out of the resources they do get.
How much of this, though, in some ways, through some changes in state law and all of that, the ways that communities can respond on their own to needs and challenges has been limited as well. You know, are you picking up on frustration with that in the conversations? John's nodding his head.
So one of the challenges that was articulated as we were going around the state for the rural areas is not so much I think there's a recognition that the state funding happens for the way that it does for a reason, but some frustration with the strings that come attached to those pots of money. And so there was a conversation at one of the commissions that there was a historic structure in a particular city that needed its roof repaired. And so they went and tried to seek out resources to repair the roof through a state program, only to find out there wasn't a roof repair program. There was a facade program. And they said, well, great, we'll wait till it leaks enough that the facade crumbles, and then we'll come back and ask you for facade repair. And so there was that notion that even when communities are trying to be proactive, thinking ahead and thinking about what the best investment is, sometimes the strings that come attached to resources don't allow that. So I think trying to think about how we can invest wisely in maybe places in state code or in state programs that inhibit the ability to do so might be of interest and of value that we can add.
We are talking about Thriving Communities, Thriving State. It's a project studying what makes Hoosiers thrive in communities of different sizes, whether they're urban, mid-sized, or rural or small town communities. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. John, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I've been kind of on hold, haven't heard the conversation, so forgive me if my question is a little out of context. I live in Montgomery County. Crawfordsville is the county seat, population 15,000. County is 30,000. We've got one out of four adults who are living below the federal poverty line, and one out of three children experiences food insecurity. So we've got a lot of problems we're trying to address as a community, and one thing that we're trying to do is we're implementing a program that's based on Ruby Payne's book, Bridges Out of Poverty. It's called Getting Ahead in a Just Getting By World. And we found this program. It's apparently in 23 states and 5 countries, and apparently it's been so successful that the state of Oklahoma has established a kind of a statewide office to help get this program spread throughout the state. I know that Putnam County is starting a chapter, Morgan County also. So it seems to be known in Indiana and is spreading. I just wondered if the commissioners had knew about this program and what they perhaps felt programs that, you know, sort of try to help people, to move people from welfare to work, you know, through jobs, some skills training and so forth, how those programs can enhance the vibrancy of communities throughout our state. That's my question.
Great. Thanks very much for the call and the question, John. And I'll throw it to the other John. We have an abundance of Johns here on this program.
Well, John, it's a good question, specifically about whether we've addressed or looked at the Ruby Payne Bridges Out of Poverty model. We haven't quite gotten that far along in the commission's work as of yet. But what we have started to do is very much think intentionally about kind of framing the issue of education, and that starts, you know, at the pre-K level, going up through post-secondary, and aligning what we're doing in communities, whether it be early childhood education or whether what we're doing in the traditional K-12 setting, and thinking about how that aligns for future career success or just success, however defined, in the future. And as we get more specific around looking at particular issues, and as the commission continues to meet, we'll be looking at particular programs and assessing the degree to which they may or may not be of value, and certainly building that toolkit that folks can use at the local level. So I'm sure that is an initiative that we'll look at, and I appreciate the knowledge that Montgomery County is working on that, as well as Putnam County is working to implement it. So I would also just make the comment to anyone else that's listening out there, if you're aware of programs that are successful, that are working, that are being applied in Indiana, we are interested in hearing about those.
If people want to take part in your study, or have some input, or even just check in with you, is there a contact, a way that they can step into that role?
Sure. All of our contact information is available on our website, which is iupolicyinstitute.iupui.edu. I think.
okay.
You can also...
Normally I'd ask you to repeat that, but since there was not a whole lot of conviction in that...
I can tell you for certain that our Twitter handle is at IU Public Policy.
Okay.
So there are myriad ways that if you Google our information, and I'm sure that we can follow up with you and also have our information.
We can put that on Facebook and Twitter. We can deal with that through our social media. So we're at the stage where you're compiling. When do you anticipate completion of the study?
So,
either any one of you.
So we're looking at early first quarter of 2016 as our public rollout of our findings. What we'll be doing in between now and then is we'll be working at each of the commission levels, and as each of the commissions develop their own recommendations, we'll come together and work on crosswalking, say, okay, these things seem to make sense across all geographies. These things are in conflict. Let's talk about those. So 2016, early 2016 for a public rollout, and then probably fourth quarter of 2015 doing that crosswalk and trying to understand which things make sense across the geographies. In between now and then, we'll be having those conversations, framing them around the particular topics.
And what do you hope the takeaways will be for all of this? I mean, what at the end, what do you anticipate will be a successful?
What I anticipate and what I hope may be different. What I hope is that
all right, we'll start optimistic. We'll start with what you hope.
Thank you. That's much easier. What I hope is that we really do come to understand the interdependencies amongst urban, midsize, and rural Indiana and commit to making sure that all three parts of the state of Indiana are thriving. And then on top of that, I believe, as Jamie and John have both pointed out, we should have a toolkit, a menu of thriving strategies that people believe will work for urban, midsize, and rural Indiana. And with those two things and a commitment to actually strive for a thriving future, I think we'll have made a positive impact on public policy in Indiana.
We've gotten a tweet from a listener named Melvin. If you'd like to reach out to us via Twitter, you can do so at WFYI. Melvin offers up ways to improve communities in Indiana, and he lists some things. He says cooperative ownership of public utilities, environmental safety, social enterprises, integrated transportation, access to political representatives, empathetic leadership, intelligent planning, citizens helping each other, and equitable distribution of public resources. How many of those are on all your lists already, or has he come up with some new ones?
Technically speaking, we don't have a list yet.
Oh, okay.
So we're to the point where we're identifying which topics we want to build lists for. Those are all great ideas. Save that message, and we'll be sure to incorporate it in the process.
Well, you can find it on our Twitter feed,
okay.
So it's there. It's there for you already. And again, with these, I mean, at what point do you start bringing all three of these commissions' constituencies together? And encouraging them to start thinking more collaboratively once they've identified. I mean, in some ways, what you're trying to do here is strikes me as a little bit similar to the original Constitutional Convention, where you're getting people to first identify and understand their self-interests and then bring them together to negotiate through enlightened self-interest about what their greater interests might be and the places that they dovetail. When does that part kick in?
I think we're looking at probably the fourth quarter of this year. I think really we have to go through, to your point, everybody kind of defining their own self-interests. And each commission has a couple of co-chairs associated with it. So for the Rural Commission, it's Mike Kubacki of Lake City Bank, based in Warsaw, Indiana, and then Mayor Shauna Gerges, the mayor of Bedford, Indiana, a private representative and a public representative.
And North and South.
And North and South.
A
yeah.
Oh, yeah. Regional balance.
All the thought that went into it.
Yeah.
So, and each group has a counterparts to their role. And so those groups are continuing to meet to keep each other informed. The three of us are conversing to keep each other informed. And so some of that work is happening. I think it'll happen more intentionally and more maybe publicly the fourth quarter of this year.
And will those be the sessions that have to be chaired with the folks with the big gavels, former Lieutenant Governor Davis and former Chief Justice Shepard?
Mm-hmm.
They play an important role through the entire process, but they will play a particularly important role at that kumbaya moment where we try to pull this all together.
And who are your co-commissioners?
Betsy McCall, Vice President of Central Indiana Corporate Partnership, and David Bennett of a foundation in Fort Wayne.
Okay. And yours, Jamie?
And mine are Jeff Ray of the St. Joseph County Chamber of Commerce and Tracy Hamilton-Souza of the Heritage Fund in Bartholomew County.
Oh, and Melvin has tweeted in a few more suggestions. These are actually, Melvin, I appreciate it because these are very, very thoughtful ideas. Membership in regional food shed, fair zoning ordinances, and fair and equitable taxation for business, nonprofits, and individuals. How much of this, I mean, we're still focusing on a state level. There is a school of thought that the path to, you know, not only more prosperity but better quality of life is to begin thinking regionally. That, for example, when the new governor of Illinois says he wants to come and eat in Indiana's lunch or whatever it was he said, that instead of us pitting our state against state, we should be looking at ways that we could collaborate to enhance the entire region, which was a theme of the show we did from Lakeshore Public Radio. How much of that plays into this as well, Drew?
I think we play it at layers. And so when you talk about regionalism, at one level, it's can we get the regions within Indiana to cooperate better? And if we could provide a model that shows how we've come to recognize those interdependencies and cooperated regionally within Indiana, then we could take the Indiana model and say maybe this is how we apply it to the Midwest. So let's get our own house in order and let's show people that we can do it well, and then we can start thinking about how we create cooperation between Indiana, Illinois, Ohio, Kentucky.
Let me ask this. I mean, what do you anticipate? You have, I know you technically don't have lists. You've just started the process. But when you bring everybody together for what Drew calls the kumbaya moment here later on, what do you anticipate will be the thorniest issues to resolve?
I think, not speaking for my colleagues, I think Jamie alluded to it earlier, I think nobody's going to oppose, so my rural commissioners aren't going to oppose this urban program or this mid-sized program. The most difficult aspect of it is how the pie gets divided that allows those programs to go forward. So I think talking about what we want to do is not very threatening, but when we talk about how the pie is going to get divided and whether money's going to flow to this at the expense of that, that's where it becomes a thorny issue.
How many legislators are involved in this process, any?
Four.
Four? Who are they?
So there are two on urban that are, who are your two urban?
Senator Rogers and, thanks for putting me on the spot.
Earlene Rogers from Northwest Indiana.
And then I have Ed Clear from New Albany, and John has.
if you ask me any other, Phil Booth, okay.
So you are going to be able that if that resource question, there are going to be people who can speak directly to that about how the process gets determined. I think we would like to continue this conversation after you've done more work, probably in the fall when it sounds like all of these folks are coming together. I would like to thank you, though, for coming in and talking with us at the start of what promises to be a really fascinating conversation. We've been talking with Drew Classic, John Marin, and Jamie Palmer of the Indiana University Public Policy Institute. I'd like to invite our listeners, also like to thank our listeners for joining us on this one. I'd like to invite our listeners to tune in next Tuesday when we're going to have a special live conversation with Indianapolis Mayor Bill Hudnut, who, as you may know, is fighting for his life right now. I am John Kroll. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Terzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations. We'll be right back.